Today we're going to be talking with Congressman Mike Bost, who, Congressman, I believe you've been attending the Republican convention we just talked about in the news. Tell us a little bit about how things went there, what you observed, how things went overall. I
guess. It started the week out with a lot of unity, which is, you know, this is the third convention that I've been to in my political time, and normally the business matters are stretched out throughout the week, including usually on Wednesday, with the conclusion on Thursday, would be the vote that would nominate the particular president, because quite often it's a split vote, and president and vice president. What we did this, because we were so united in our first session, we got all the votes done up until the fact that in the second session of the first day, after we found out that J.D. Vance was the vice president, we went through the paperwork, and paperwork was done, and which is really wild, because normally that takes a long time. And I say paperwork, it's whenever the chairman of the United States Republican Party stands before you and takes a roll call of the states to find out about their delegates and how their delegates are voting. We went through with unanimous consent. Matter of fact, one, we just didn't even do the roll call off the start. We just said they're all present. Anybody object? Aye, boom, got it passed. The unity also was encouraged with the Illinois Republicans, because we have, you know, we stay at the same hotel. I actually was a keynote speaker. Actually, Darren Bailey and I had talked, and I've actually, before all the crowd, when my keynote address, told Darren, I told people that Darren and I had talked, you know, we hate primaries, it is what it is, but let us explain to you something very right now. We're going to stand shoulder to shoulder today, and whenever we make it, as delegates, and make the vote for Donald Trump, because we know he's the right thing. So it's caused a unity that even in the Republican Party in Illinois. And so from there, it was great. And that's what it normally is. It's a production. It was a production of some great speakers. Everybody from not naturally elected officials and leadership on both the House and the Senate. But then you also have stories of people. We had a World War II veteran that was on Iwo Jima that gave a speech. We had the mothers and fathers and spouses of the 13 that fell in our botched Afghanistan withdrawal. And all of these things were compiled into a very, very good emotional program at times. Then concluding last night with a speech from our president, who gave in great detail about the shooting. Well, and then also the speech from J.D. Vance the night before. I think J.D. Vance is a great pick for vice president, and here's why. If you've read his book, which is an amazing book, he was raised in a situation, a mother with drug addiction, was not really raised by his mother, no father, taken in by a grandmother who raised him, but it was kind of a rough situation there. But he, you know, any person that should not have had a chance to survive or not thrive or just kind of had the meager existence would probably have been J.D. But instead, this guy got his life together. The Marine, came out of the Marine Corps, used the GI Bill to graduate Yale and actually be a successful business person, moving on to become the U.S. Senator, and now the vice president candidate.
I mean, like I said, I mean, there were several names put up, but I think from the start, his kind of led the pack.
Yeah, and you know, one thing, my wife and I and several others were talking, because there's some good quality people. The pool was deep to reach into as far as the quality people that were available that could be our vice president. Now, here's the thing. When Donald Trump would be looking this over, understand, with the experience he has of what he needs in a cabinet, I have to believe that he made calculations based on who would be vice president and who would have other spots in the cabinet and why. Because the advantage that Donald Trump has over any other candidate we've had there was only one other time in history that there was a chance for a candidate to return to the, or a person who served in the White House, then comes back and serves again. So the advantage he has is he knows what those cabinet positions need to be. So I would likely say that he and his team studied over and over and said, hey, Scott would be better at A and B. We'd love to have him for president, but we really need him for A. And the list goes on and on. Matter of fact, Doug, the governor, he is probably going to become head of finance, as well he should, because his background is in that. So these are the decisions that probably went through. You know, I wasn't there. This is me just assuming that this is the process that they would use. And knowing Donald Trump and the people around him, they are thinking way in advance. They're thinking ahead, not just for the moment.
Of course, one of the big topics was the assassination attempt. And that was, I mean, that was a shock. That's something that you hope never happens and they always prepare for. But I know it's an ongoing investigation, but any comments?
Well,
from you?
So instantly, within after the initial shock was over, we're figuring out what's going on. Bits and pieces are coming in, and it made sure it was not a terrorist group, even though we found out that a terrorist group was also plotting, not necessarily for that, but for some other time. That in our investigations, which we did not know, but the Secret Service did know. But the head of Secret Service, we're asking for her to step down even before we finish our investigation. But there's two investigations that are already started. One is by the Oversight Committee itself, and that Oversight Committee was already subpoenaing certain information and have already had a Zoom call, even though they will be back in to have a hearing on Monday. Well, joining that hearing will also be a special task force on this particular, a bipartisan task force, which Speaker Johnson put together, that will be going over in detail what the failure was. How did this happen? How did you person climb on the roof and everybody's telling them and well in advance and they're not doing anything about it? How did that happen? What's the details? Where did the ball fall short? What do we need? Do we need to increase resources around our candidates that are out there running, because the security detail should not fail like this, and then make sure it never happens again? And that's what our job is.
Right. I go back to whenever I was going to Renlight College, studying my criminal justice program. I was working student security back in the mid-80s when Pat Robertson was one of the Republican candidates back then. And he came to the college, and of course, the Secret Service came in, like almost 2 weeks in advance, and went over everything with us. We knew what we were doing. They told us what they were going to be doing. They were going to have, more or less the inner perimeter, the outer perimeter. They would also have people at, but they also, that's where they used us. So it's a long process of what typically occurs. When. A president or a presidential candidate, comes to speak somewhere.
Well, I know a lot of your listeners know Rick Crone. Well, Rick Crone's dad, Herman, it was his barn that Ronald Reagan came to when Ronald Reagan was in office. And if you listen to the stories of Rick or Herman before he passed, they came in, they picked out surveillance spots on top of grain bins where they put people that you couldn't see, list goes on and on and on. However, setting out in a farm system like that, that's a little bit easier, but yet they were at full force there than it was here, where how in the world do you get a line of sight building that the roof is not covered? That doesn't make sense.
Exactly. That was my first question, having been through that myself, knowing how did that happen, especially that, 150 yards is not really that far.
Well, 100 yards or 150 yards, because I think the calculation is just over 100 yards. But that being said, every Marine is taught with the M16, which is the AR-15, except without the fully automatic and three-round burst. But the AR-15 and its round, every Marine is taught at 100 yards how to make a kill shot, how to make a kill shot at 250 yards, and how to take a full body shot at 500 yards. So, this was not a long shot. And it's not amazing to think this 20-year-old could make that shot, since he was known to frequent the target range. And that came out in the study, too.
Right. Moving on to, as you mentioned last night, former President Trump making a speech, now the Republican candidate for president. I noticed the speech compared to President Trump's past speeches, it was a little bit more subdued, but that would be expected, after the circumstances, but
right.
Still.
It doesn't change his personality, but it maybe changes his delivery. His delivery was still Donald Trump. And I loved every moment of it, but it was the longest speech ever given for a nomination. I just let you know that. It officially is in the record books. But what's really wild is you can actually watch on the convention floor. If you look back over your shoulder, you can see the monitors, because he's got the teleprompters up there where he is, but he also has monitors so he can keep his head up towards the crowd and be using it. Jeff, it would roll and he'd said something, and then all of a sudden he'd go off script for a while, and then he'd come back to where he was supposed to be on the monitor, and the monitor would roll more. And so that was typical Trump, okay? That was typical Trump. But you're right. Instantly, when he first started speaking and was telling about being shot, his tone had changed. He's been through an experience where death was at the door. He knows it. That has an effect on your life, your attitude. Let me tell you a lot of things that the unity that he talked about in his speech, about that he is running not to be the president of half the country. He's wanting to be the president of the whole country, Republican, Democrat, independent alike. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to agree with their issues, but it's also very, very clear that he understands. Now, and does he still do the rhetoric that Trump does? He does, but it is subdued. And we noticed it even before the assassination attempt. He was pretty subdued in the debate, given the opportunity. I believe that the old Donald Trump would have taken, whenever Biden was on his situation like he was, the old Donald Trump would have just kept pressing down and down and down, where Donald Trump began to not have the attacks, kind of backed off, didn't bring up some things because Joe was doing it himself during the debate. And the old Donald Trump, I'm afraid, would have been a little more aggressive on that.
All right, Congressman, I'll tell you what, we need to get, squeeze this break in real quick. Let's do that. We'll come back and talk some more with Congressman Mike Bost right after this.
Sounds great.
And welcome back again, talking with Congressman Mike Bost. Congressman Bost.
Yes.
Recently attending the, or recently, actually still there probably.
Yeah, still there. We did not get back in from all the events and getting through security and everything like that till well after midnight last night. We're packing things up now to head down to some meetings down in the Chicago area before we head on to D.C. after the weekend.
All right, Congressman. Well, talking about some other things outside of the convention, okay. I just noticed being a patient at the VA myself, there's been some issue with a shortfall on the part of the VA that has come into question here lately.
Yeah, and let me tell you that I responded back to the secretary right after he put that out. You know, VA informed us that $2.9 billion budget shortfall in the VBA, that's the this fiscal year, and a $12 billion shortfall in the VHA next fiscal year. Now, that's an expansion that were spotty, and it was contradictory whenever he gave us the agency information, and even in the press releases they sent out. So, mostly, these involved increased demand for benefits for health care resulting from the PACT Act that VA has been aware of, but apparently failed to budget for. So it's kind of on them, but we've got to figure this out. But the biggest cost driver is greatly increasing in VHA, which is a hiring. Despite the national hiring freeze, Doc Landerhar, all who's over that, declared that was because of hiring. Yet they aren't hiring frontline staff, they're hiring upper executive staff. Now that means the VA has dumped much of the 2025 budget request, which they actually called for cuts, by the way, and are now calling for an increase. And there's not enough money in there, either the House or the Senate appropriation bills, to cover the shortfall. So we now are you know, I have wrote a letter. Matter of fact, did it today is the 18th. I did it 2 days ago, right whenever it came out, and basically went into detail on the secretary on where I see the shortfalls and why. You're making a budget request, but you're mishandling the budget. Understand that we as Congress have given over the last 4 years, not only their budget request, but more, especially during COVID. So then now it doesn't seem to be a money problem that we're giving them, but a mismanagement of their money. Then that's why we are going to be very, very aggressive. That doesn't mean anybody's going to lose their service. I know that people like you, Jeff, or that's the question. Do I go to the VA and still receive my services? The answer is yes, you will. This is an argument between us and the administration, the way they are spending the money. Look, we don't cut VA, but apparently they don't understand that to do their fiduciary duty and handle their operations correctly when you actually have to come back and say, oh, we didn't do that. No. You are the people that are supposed to do it right. And if you can't do it right, you need to go and we'll find the people that can. And that's where we're at with this.
Right, right.
But no one's services. This is an inside bike, but nobody's actual services are going to be cut.
Right. I believe I read about it through text that come out through the American Legion. And
yep.
You know, I mean, a lot of people don't understand. I mean, the way it's set up, there's different structure. I mean, you have your veterans with disabilities, different stages of that, and rightly so, should be at the top of the list. And then you go down from there to where, you know, you have the ones maybe who don't have a disability but still served and are still able to get care. But still
receive benefits.
Right.
Yeah,
but you're not as high a priority, and like I said, which is completely understandable, because the ones who have disabilities and stuff deserve, you know, they've given more than others, but still, you know, I mean,
but we as the VA as an agency itself knows and is aware of how many veterans we have in the system, and what they can estimate where their numbers are going to fall in providing anything, so that no one would be turned down services. Now, where they are failing is, when I said this, okay, they are on a hiring freeze, kind of, okay, for frontline workers and everything like this, but we know for a fact that they spent a tremendous amount of money hiring executives. Who, remember, we're fighting a battle right now that when we gave money to VA right after COVID that was directed and should have been given to bonuses for people who are care workers and everything, nurses and docs and things like that, to make sure that they're keeping up pace with their counterparts in out in the civilian world or out in the private world, so that we don't lose them. But instead, they calculated and gave bonuses to our most highest paid executives. Well, no, that's not, and it was based on a percentage basis. So the higher you were paid, the larger bonus you got. And now we're trying to recoup that, because it came out in an investigation that that's what they've done. But yet nobody's been fired for it, even though I've called in three letters for them to do that. Because that's our job, is to say, you're not doing this right. And we were pretty sure from what our investigation shows that they knew what they were doing and just secretly kind of did it so that everybody got a bonus in the operations, which was, some of those bonuses, Jeff, were $50,000 and $100,000 bonus. And you start throwing the money around like that. I mean, that's all money that should be used for frontline delivery of services. And it's frustrating, because this is not about the bureaucrats. It's about the veterans. It's about providing the service for the veterans. And that's where we fall down in the VA, and that's where we've got to keep arguing.
Definitely. Just trying to look some other things going on. I noticed... Go ahead, Congress.
I was just going to say, we want to wish all the people up in Washington County, I know they've had an awful, awful week, and everybody surrounding there after the breach of the security dam and overflow of the water on the reservoir there in Nashville, and the people that have been flooded out of their homes. You know, we were able to keep everybody safe. Thank heaven we had to bring one woman that was trapped in her home based on the fact the water rose so fast she couldn't get a car in. And so let me tell you, I want to say thank you for the emergency service personnel, the sheriff, everybody that was working. We had our office reach out as soon as we started. I know that Charlie Meyer had his office working. It's been a rough week for them, and we want to remember them in our prayers and pray that their damage is cleared up quickly, and that that maybe, you know, maybe the farmers overprayed, because we've had a lot of rain, right?
Definitely. Like I said, it seems like we either get no rain or we get it all at one time.
Yeah. So, but I don't know what other issues are out there you want to talk about. I'm more than willing.
Well, looking at one here, it's not too far from our area. The Chinese acquisition of the Cahokia Grain Terminal. Now that
you betcha. I was right in the middle of this arguing to try to stop it, but we don't find out about these things quite often until after the fact. And by the time I and Nikki Budzinski joined in a letter, because that's her district, joined in a letter to the administration to not allow this sale to go through, they did. It was a sale of the Growmark plant, or Growmark loading dock. Now, that's the problem that exists, Jeff, that's is all part of our problem that we're using the Chinese task force that we created. they're buying up vital lines for the flow of commodities, for property, buying up the owning companies and take major control of companies. And then the argument from the other side, well, yes, it's a China-owned company, but it's not the communist China. Well, I just want to let you know what you just said when they say that. Communist China means the government owns everything. Everything. Which means now China owns that facility. We've got to stop this. We can never be in a situation where we can't control the flow of food, fiber, fuel. This is very, very dangerous, and that's why it's so important. Because remember, China, and I've said it on your chat, on your station before, China is not only communist, but they started out and they are imperialist, which means they play for the long game. That's why they're buying up all of this land, a lot of it near our military installations. They're buying up corporations, taking control of corporations that are, would have dire concerns as far as our supply chain is concerned, just on our normal day-to-day operations. They're also building a Navy that's huge and an Air Force that's huge, and they're building islands in international waters. Islands in international waters that they can use as their bases. So there is a whole lot of issues out there. This is just one of many issues that we have to be very, very careful with. That's why it was when we wrote the letter. And you know what? The American company, Growmark, we know that they prefer that we didn't write the letter, because they're, as far as they're concerned, they're selling a product, or they're selling an asset. Well, yeah, but you don't sell an asset that will put us in a position where our enemies can cut the supply chain off our ass.
Exactly.
So that's where we're at with that.
All right, Congressman. Well, we are out of time now, but I do appreciate you taking time to talk with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on. This is a great day to be able to talk to you about the exciting things that are happening at the convention. And you know what? We got the next 4 months of campaign.
Exactly. Congressman, you have a safe trip back home. And
all right, Jeff. Thank you. And thanks for having me on.
All right. Congressman Mike Bost here on The People Speak this morning. That'll wrap things up. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.